You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
I'm watching it and I'm like, well, these are straight women cosplaying and neither of them seem like they're really enjoying it. And it almost feels like they're ridiculing
totally
lesbian sex. And this doesn't, so I avoided lesbian sex for, or like lesbian, I didn't avoid lesbian sex. I avoided lesbian porn.
I'm dyking out, you're dyking out. Let's dyke out together. See what it's all about.
Dyking out, dyking out, dyking out, dyking out.
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, a podcast that you can listen to in a secret browser if it makes you feel better. I'm Carolyn Berchier.
I'm Melody Kamali, and today we're dyking out with adult performer and queer porn producer Nikki Hartz about queer porn.
Do you think there are some people who listen to the podcast on a secret browser? Like they get it straight from our website in a secret browser so nobody knows? So that their phone...
Statistically.
Yeah, so their phone doesn't get a notification that's like a new episode of Dyking Out's available. Okay, anyway... Wow, we have an exciting announcement. We are back in the saddle.
Yep.
We got a live show happening for Pride with our friends at Maker's Mark, and it's going to be June 26th. Yes, that is the same date as the Dyke March. We're going to march, and then we're going to have our show.
We're going to keep marching south to Brooklyn.
Yes, even though Brooklyn Pride's a different time, we don't care. We don't play by the rules. We're doing our show
dykes do.
At Good Judy. It is a gay bar in Brooklyn that has a performance space upstairs. It's going to be indoors. You have to be vaccinated to attend. There is only a very limited amount of tickets because they are limiting the capacity since we are still in a pandemic. And because of that, we're going to be releasing the tickets to our patrons first. So if you are a patron of the podcast, first of all, if you're at the $20 a month level, you get a free ticket to the show if you want. You'll just have to confirm. Yep. You'll just have to confirm that with us that you're coming and we'll save that ticket for you. And then after that's taken care of, any patron will be able to get first dibs on buying a ticket to the show in New York. And then if there are still any tickets left over, which I don't think there will be, I don't know, we'll see, we'll open it up to the public. And unfortunately, we would love to have something bigger. You know, at Stonewall, we used to have 75 people there in the audience every time. And this will be a third of the size. So we'll see. It's going to be still fun. It's going to be a great time. And we're also, we've got the bug. We've got the performance bug now. And Melody and I are definitely looking to have a lot more events happening in the future. So stay tuned. We also, speaking of Patreon, just recorded our Patreon ep for this week. We talked about so much. What did we talk about, Mel?
Well, if you want to know, sign up. How about that?
I will say that we go into more detail about some of the things that we might be talking about in this next segment. If you want more of the deets of what we've been up to related to us being super gay, go to Patreon and listen to that episode, because we're giving out the hot takes, the details, who do we meet,
recaps.
What do we think of them? It's all there. Mm-hmm.
And sorry if I came off harsh. I mean, I just would love for you to sign up. Okay. Carolyn.
Melody.
What's the gayest thing you did this week?
It is impossible to pick one thing, because I was in P-Town with another queer couple during Baby Dyke Week, meeting up with U-Haulers, with Dyking Out listeners. That was pretty gay. But I feel like because my gayest thing a month ago or so when I booked the trip was booking the trip, that anything P-Town related maybe can't count. Just
yeah.
So P-Town going doesn't count. I did watch all of Feel Good in one sitting, obsessed. Season 2, twice as good as season 1. Watch it if you haven't already. The Lesbian Bar Project. Melody and
That's
I hosted
it.
The screening of The Lesbian Bar Project amongst queer royalty, amongst the heroes of our community, the bar owners of many of these bars, of hers in Alabama, of As You Are Bar, and formerly of Aloho. We had Joe and Coach there, the Smallmans from hers. We had the Lisas from Cubbyhole and Henrietta Hudson. Leah Delaria, like so many people were there, and we got to host that, and everything about that felt like the gayest thing. But mm-hmm. The gayest thing that I did actually had to be that there's a show called The Spec Script Show, where you write a spec script. So it's an episode of an existing TV show that hasn't been written yet. But the twist, because it's a comedy show, is you have to write it about a show that you've never watched an episode of. For me, that show was Xena, Warrior Princess.
How did I not know this, that you'd never seen a
I've never
Xena
seen
episode.
An episode of Xena. And Sarah Kennedy, who is one of the producers of this show, friend of the pod, past guest, one of my favorite humans. This was going to be her birthday month. She got to pick who was writing the script. She knew that I haven't seen Xena, because once I was writing a comedy sketch about Xena and wasn't willing to watch an episode. So I just asked Sarah for some information about Xena. Sarah asked me to do this, and I spent my first 2 days furiously writing a 25-page spec script of what I think goes on in the show Xena Warrior Princess. It's very gay, as you can imagine, and that felt like the gayest thing that I could possibly...
Yeah,
even gayer than being at the Lesbian Bar Project screening.
Whoa. Which was the gayest thing.
Yes.
I'll say.
Yeah.
I mean, is it my gayest thing? I don't... A lot to choose from, too.
I mean, it was super gay, and it's really not fair that I just had the gayest week of my life and had to list off all of those things. What was the gayest thing? Was it Lesbian Bar Project?
Let me see. Yeah, Lesbian Bar Project. I was in Austin, Texas prior last week, and... I did shout, "Are you gay?" at two girls taking a selfie in front of a rainbow mural, just so I could
harass
I don't
them.
Know. Yeah. Maybe they're listening now.
You're in Texas.
Yeah, I'm
yelling,
in Texas.
Are you gay?
down a city block. Yeah. These adorable girls, they're a couple from Salt Lake City. They are actually, speaking of Lesbian Bar Project, trying to open a lesbian bar in Salt Lake City.
We'd love to see it.
So I introduced myself.
Amazing.
I told them about Dyking Out. One of them was like, "Oh, I'd actually listened to an episode with the owner of Aloho or... with the manager of Aloho." It was great because I was too intimidated. I mean, Austin, wow, amazing looking sapphics in that town. I mean, I was hanging out with my more hipster friends on the east side, and everyone there, it's just like a little like Williamsburg, you know, the looks, I mean. And I hadn't really approached a lot of queers while I was there. And this was on my last morning getting a coffee, my last morning in Austin, shouting, "Are you gay?" And they're like, yeah. And they said they're going to check out Dyking Out. So it was all, you know, a success. Thank God. What if they were like, no, we just like rainbows. Like what? That could have gone wrong.
I was going to say it definitely. I would not put it past straight girls to be like, pretty rainbow, let's gram it. Like,
you know what? This is the second time I'm realizing now of the trip that I asked someone, are you gay? Because I did it at a happy hour a few nights before in Austin, and it's only just coming back to me. I asked a girl, she was like asking me about myself. I said, I'm a comedian, like I co-host this podcast, Dyking Out. And she's like, oh, cool. Like, she's like, oh, I got to check it out. Something like that. And I go, are you gay? And she was not. She was on a date with a man, and she goes, no, well, no, but I masturbate to women. So I was like, so you're queer.
Wow.
Well, I was like, oh, you're not gay, you're queer.
I hope she listens to this episode, speaking of masturbating
truly
to queer porn. Well, one last thing before we get into our interview. I think our joint gayest thing was while we were hosting the Lesbian Bar Project, which you can watch online. Go to thelesbianbarproject.com, see it for free. It's a 20-minute documentary. It is incredible. And it's sponsored by the event, and they've been a huge support for the Lesbian Bar Project, is Jägermeister. And while we were hosting, we had a joke, and I said, I think Jägermeister is the only thing here that's been inside more women than Leah Delaria. Mm-hmm. And didn't realize that Leah was in the wings. Like, we knew that she was going to be there, but we thought somewhere. She was going to be sitting at this one table that was reserved for her on the other side. And after I say that, all of a sudden Leah comes out and is like, that's a lie. That's so a bald-faced lie. That's worse than a Trump lie. You fucking bitches. And I'm like, well, Melody and I... and. Like, it was so funny. We were laughing so hard, and I think that's a fun joint gayest moment for
us. That was it.
Okay. Today we are diking out about queer porn with the creator of Dyked Down, which is now Genderflux. They changed the landscape of porn and have worked to create adult content that our community can actually enjoy watching. And now you can support them on OnlyFans. You haulers, it's the one and only Nikki Hart. Let's get to it. Nikki, thank you so much for joining us to Dyke Out this week.
Thank you for having me. It's been a long time in the making.
Yes, certainly it has.
Has been. What a bummer for us. We were so excited to come out to LA over a year ago and talk to you in person and do this interview. It's fun to revisit those email chains from back then. I found one that was super optimistic that was about setting up a show in May. And we're like, yeah, let's do it. It's going to be great. And I'm like, oh my gosh. That was even like at the beginning of lockdown. Like, we thought this is going to be 3 weeks and then everyone's going to be having fun again. Anyway, enough pandemic talk. Nobody wants to talk about that. Over it.
Ish.
Yeah. Let's talk about you, okay. Nikki, specifically your week. Could you please tell us, what is the gayest thing you did this week?
I don't know if it's technically this week. The last like week and a half or so has been kind of a blur because I arrived back home after helping my longest running gay friendship friend move across country in a U-Haul.
Oh, wow.
In a U-Haul. Yeah.
I don't know how much.
Wow.
I mean, we would have still counted it if you'd said like a Penske truck. That's pretty gay. But
off limits.
So what was your role in the helping? Were you driving the U-Haul? Were you manual labor?
Fortunately, there wasn't a lot of stuff to move. It was primarily the drive.
Yeah.
My friend in true like dyke duo fashion doesn't even have a license. So I right. did the driving for the most part. I let them drive a little bit, but
Right.
Yeah. So that was pretty gay. We gave it up the whole way.
Yeah. Thelma and Louise style. That's pretty gay.
Did you have like a road trip soundtrack?
Totally. We met in high school and we're like about to turn 30 now. So it's like this like long half-life friendship of like all the music. We like went through the ages on track.
And, right.
Yeah.
We made a little video along the way. I'm going to put out a little movie about the move. So yeah, it was an experience.
Awesome. I have to ask, did you play emo music at all on this drive?
I think it's safe to say no. Like, probably like one of the only genres that we skipped.
I have to ask because when I first discovered you, you had a certain haircut. And I was like, yeah, no doubt this is a real deal, Dyke. But furthermore, I was like, not only can I relate to this porn star, but also like, this is an emo chick. Like, and I just put that on you. I like projected that all onto you. And I was like, that's my favorite. Not only clearly gay, but also emo. And you're like, no.
I definitely had that look. I think it's just like I came about in like the MySpace era and the internet, right. And that look stuck on me far too long.
That is such a quintessential MySpace look.
Yeah, I had it. Yeah, totally. For sure. It was spiky stuff.
Yeah, I'm happy to say that that's reached its end. But surprisingly, I was never a big like emo music person, so I missed that part.
Yeah, emo and MySpace get conflated a lot, so I'm understanding what happened there. Yeah, thank you for indulging me.
Do you remember
the hair? So.
Yeah.
Do you remember what your MySpace song was, or what one of them was? If you were changing it, you know,
I guarantee there was a time period where it was like Bikini Kill.
Yeah, yes.
It gets, but yeah, that was that. I'm sure I had a Kathleen Hanna pick in my like heroes section.
Yes. Yeah. Love it.
Should we go further back? Let our listeners, if for the few who might not know, a little bit more about yourself, what your background is.
Yeah. So right now, this year is my 10th year in porn, which I never thought I would say, but here we are. Yeah. I started porn when I was 19 as a young dyke. And, I set out to make like ethical lesbian porn, and along the way found myself making all kinds of porn that there ever was. And it's been quite the journey, but yeah, that's pretty much all I have done with my adult life. And now I'm about to be like 30. So I had an interesting 20s.
Oh, yeah. Well, you said that you never thought you would say that. So when you went into porn, did you think of it as, oh, I'm just going to do this for a little bit?
That's a good question. I think back then, on one hand, I like didn't even really think I would live that long. I thought like I was just going to be one of those. I was very reckless and whatever. So there's that. But I kind of just figured it was like stepping into like the sex industry in general, which I was like, I don't know, long-term, maybe I'll become like a sex educator or something. I didn't really see myself like still actually making movies, but that's what I have like learned to love the most about it is the movie making process, rather than like the like sex ed side of things that I was really into in the beginning.
Did you grow up in LA or did you set out there around 19?
I actually was born and raised in Ohio, Columbus, Ohio. I spent like the first 15 years or so of my life there. And then my parents and I made a trip out in my early teens. I was about 15 or so. And like shortly after, like our whole little like family life like crumbled and my parents got divorced. And we thought maybe, I think there was like talks of us all moving out there, but it kind of ended up just being me. And I went out there on my own. And I bounced around all over the country a lot until I was like 19 or so. And then I like got into porn and made the like full-time move to LA.
Gotcha.
Wow. So 15, you went out to California by yourself?
Yeah, I pretty much left home at 15. I was in bands at the time. I had no intention of getting into porn at 15, obviously.
Right.
I guess I kind of always thought it would be music at that point.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my direction there. I thought I would be like in bands and maybe like a tattoo artist or something.
Yeah.
But when I turned 18, I was living in a punk house at the time, and it was like an all women's like feminist punk house, and they started doing queer porn screenings. And so I discovered the world of like feminist porn.
The dream. Wow.
Yeah, that sounds,
like a good time all around.
It was very influential. I went from being in like the like boy part of the punk scene, like with all my dudes. And then I found like the girl punks and the like women's studies majors. So we had these screenings at our house where they would literally just like project it onto the side of the house and invite the other punk houses over. And they were screening stuff like Crash Pad and stuff like that with all these like San Francisco, like indie dyke porn companies. And when I saw that that existed, I was like, not really seeing anyone exactly like myself, all kinds of queers, but I didn't see like a young, like androgynous lesbian in the mix.
Right.
And so I was like, I could probably do that. And that's literally what I did.
And we're glad you did.
Yeah. That's a lot of business savvy there. Being yeah. like, there.
I was like drunk.
There's a gap in the marketplace.
I was a shit show, but I was like, I just feel like that's doable. I don't know.
Do you remember the first time that you saw lesbian porn?
Good question. I'm surprised no one's asked me that. Like,
really?
Damn. I don't think so. I remember the first time I watched porn, which was 2006 era, I want to say. And yeah. It was like the softcore on HBO at night. It was when like
right.
Pirates was yeah. like the thing back then. It was like Evan Stone was the guy that like was burned into my brain, like the long haired, like Fabio looking generic guy.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's like my first memories of porn. It was like sneaking watching that like late at night on HBO.
That's interesting because broadband was kind of popular then. So I guess I would have assumed that it would have been online, but I know for me, it was also that like late night Skinamax. Yeah. Right. And seeing that and being like, wait, what is happening here? What kind of program is this?
Yeah, it's weird. I kind of never went to the internet for porn as a teenager. I think I was too paranoid about like my parents seeing.
Right.
Yeah, I read like fan fiction as a teenager, but it was all like TV, and eventually I obsessively would try to sneak into the porn store in town.
Yeah.
And so it was like DVDs. But yeah, I missed out on like early teenage internet porn, oddly enough.
That's probably for the better. I mean, what it was the Wild West. Like, I would go to my family computer, the one, Gateway 2000. And,
the computer room, yeah.
Yeah, to the computer room, and just, like, almost whiplash checking over my shoulder. And I didn't want anyone to see that I was looking at porn, so what I did is found my dad's cached porn on the internet. So it was like, I had to look at what my dad looked at, so no one would be like, well, like, if my dad ever found out, my mom never would, she didn't have the savvy. Like, my dad could be like, oh, no. That is the blonde secretary I was watching.
Oh my god!
Disgusting.
Well,
yeah, just yeah, like father, like daughter.
A little disturbing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I do love that you noticed no one looked like you, because we were all noticing no one looked like you when we were looking for porn. I remember you and Lily Cade were the only people that I was like, oh. Like, oh my right. God, one of us.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing. Like, and I saw that as well. When I first started reaching out to companies, like, it's so funny that you say Lily Kay, that like shows me, that tells me so much about the time period. Cause like, it's true. Like, I, when I started reaching out to companies, I didn't know who to turn to other than these like queer companies I was looking at. But I was like, that's only like a couple companies. Like, if I want to really do this, who else is there? And I found Lily Cade very quickly. And that was actually the first or second person to hire me ever. Not a good time. That's like one porn. That's like the only person porn I like openly talk shit about. I think
Yeah, I realized as I was saying it, I don't know anything about the biz or the drama or just like how anyone is connected to each other. And I was like, I could be throwing a bomb. Like,
what makes it a bad experience?
Well, it's so funny. I like instantly go into like shit talking. It's just like
comedians are the same way. Yeah.
Yeah, we're comedians. Constant.
Well, at the time, Lily Cade, this person, was like the only L.A. based porn person that advertised themselves as a lesbian. So that's why I found her. She was kind of like, I guess, just like monopolizing on the fact that she was the only one at the time.
Yeah. I remember it was like her brand was like
Gold Star.
Porn's only like goldfish or goldfish. Gold Star.
Being like a practical infant at the time, like just went into it assuming like, oh, like a lesbian, like she's probably great and ethical and whatever. And she just turned out to be the epitome of like shady, like monopolizing predator dyke. It was just the worst. But eventually she, back then there just wasn't a lot of like performers speaking out about like the ethical stuff going on, or the lack thereof rather, during the production of porn, and shitty shit happened a lot, and it was just kind of like agreed upon not to like out people and talk about it. And I just kind of came in and like was not down for that style. So that's just kind of one of the first people that I encountered that was just like, I expected good things having faith in a fellow gay, and was very quickly learned otherwise. And fortunately, she kind of had to kick rocks because she sucked. And people now, over the 10 years, like people are more down to recognize when people are abusers and predators.
Yeah.
Wow, a lot of parallels to comedy.
Yeah, I know.
There's this gatekeeping, or it was so hard for so long for women that the women who were first getting successful, some of them were obviously super nice and awesome, but some of them felt like, you know, there's only one woman allowed on the bill and it has to be me, and I'm not going to share my opportunities or bring other people up with me. And they get kind of cagey because they had a deal with all this bullshit and trauma and abuse to get to where they were. And they're like, I earned it, damn it. Nobody else is taking this from me. But that doesn't excuse it. So glad that you got out of that.
Well, did it all kind of coincide with Me Too era?
Yes. And oddly, I feel like the connections between the two weren't like made publicly enough at the same time, if that makes sense. Everything was kept very quiet in porn until like a lot more recently. It's been the last like couple years that people in porn, or at least amongst the industry, like talking about getting rid of people that are not good to other people on set and whatnot.
Right. I remember I recently saw, I forget who, but a porn star had a podcast, and I remember having that thought. I'm like, oh, this is, yeah, more and more porn stars should have podcasts and tell their stories, and there's just going to be a lot more transparency, and that's ultimately good. We need to hear porn stars, too.
Yeah, right? I think that's really important. Like, the industry has changed so much in so many different ways, obviously, as any industry would over 10 years, but a huge part of that is just, like, the performers actually having voices, and that kind of started with, I mean, OnlyFans is pretty much the big change, I would say.
Yeah, that seems like a huge game changer, because now you have so much more agency and control. And
yeah, it's like for so long, all of the control was held by the studios and the agencies that the performers are with, just kind of deciding who gets booked based off of whatever their creepy criteria may be. And all of us were kind of held at their mercy because they dish the money out. And OnlyFans, and there were, I feel bad just going to OnlyFans because there were so many other platforms doing it before them, but that's really the one that like blew up putting the power into the performer's hands to say, like, okay, the money goes straight from the paying customer to you rather than through those studios. That's changed everybody's life immensely.
Yeah.
And we only work with genuinely who we want to work with.
Right.
So yeah, that's been like life altering over the last couple of years.
And also in terms of making money, because, and I know that we've talked to people before that say, you know, OnlyFans can feel really saturated. And if you're not a well-known name, it can be hard to kind of break through and get traction. But I've always wondered why and how so much porn is free. And I say this as somebody who regularly performs for no money. So like, I do get it. And I guess looking at what kind of happened to the music industry and what the internet did for that. But for some reason, it just never made sense to me that there's so much free porn out there, because I'm like, how are people making money? Because if you're going to be paid for anything, it should be for this.
Yeah.
Well, a huge part of that was definitely solved really recently. The whole thing is mostly like Pornhub is the most mainstream name, but tube sites in general are kind of the source of this. It's people not paying for porn. There's a huge change made with like the laws or the rules there with Pornhub, where only verified producers can put content on Pornhub now, where in the past you could literally be anybody and upload anything. And that's not the case anymore. So that's made a huge difference. They removed like, I think like 11 million or millions of videos that happened recently. Beyond that, there's also been kind of a lot of, at least amongst people who are like big time porn consumers, rather than just like the person that like will go log on and just like watch a Pornhub video and log off, like people that are like really going to be spending money on porn in the first place. There's been so much advocacy for the idea to pay for your porn. And if you have like any interest in a single performer, it's so easy to connect now with them on social media and kind of build these relationships. And you're kind of seeing more now that people in porn are people. And so I think that that has helped people want to pay for it. It's like slightly moral, slightly technical changes, but it's all improved a lot over the years.
Yeah. I was thinking like in the past, it seems like the mentality around it, when you talk about people ignoring, you know, what about the Me Too and the abuse stuff that's happening in porn? It's almost like sweatshops overseas. It's like, I really like these Nikes. I don't want to think about how they're made. I know it's probably not great, but I can like move past it and compartmentalize. And I think a lot of people did that for porn. Like, I don't think anybody assumes that this is like the pinnacle of HR.
You know?
Right. But then people have so much shame tied to it, like more shame than they would to like being a Nike wearer, you know? So it's like, it widens that gap, I feel like, of people not wanting to pay because they don't want to acknowledge it. They don't want a credit card statement, like, saying it and, like, having to explain something.
Right.
Like, no one talks about sex or masturbating or anything, so it makes it feel even worse to me as an outsider. I don't know.
I definitely agree with all of that. It's like, I think there are so many things tied into it with people and paying for their porn. Also, not to mention the fact that it all used to kind of, back before the content was in the hands of the creators as much as it is now, a lot of it too was like all these weird websites like wanting you to join, and that's how you would have to support porn. And it's like,
it doesn't
need like that anymore. Kind of helps.
You're talking about like a bang bus.
Yeah, like join these all these studios websites that are like you join and then you're tied to them forever. It's impossible.
Right.
It's like so many different things have funneled into just this like currently like decent era that we're in.
Right.
I was literally talking with my therapist earlier today about how right now things are like the power's being passed into our hands, like we're all making good money, like all of us, like amongst the community, we're all just like borderline, like walking on eggshells, like waiting for the other shoe to drop. We're so used to such bullshit. It's like, this feels like too good to be true. Knock on wood. So yeah, it's It's a happy story right now.
Yeah.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you like porn? I just realized I knew what I wanted to ask, but didn't know how to phrase it, and it would have come out that dumb if I hadn't stopped, and then I just said it anyways.
that's a tough one.
Because, like, okay, so I obviously love comedy, grew up loving it, watching it, wanting to do it. And then I started doing it. And then it was all I saw and consumed. I was at shows every night. And then it got to the point where it was like, I don't want to watch a fucking comedy. Like, I'll watch a cult documentary. Like, I don't want to watch even a sitcom jokes. Like, it's oversaturated sometimes. So I didn't know what your relationship to porn as a consumer was.
Okay. So I feel like as a consumer,
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm totally comfortable talking about it. I'm just trying to focus in on one thing. I mean, as a consumer, I kind of suck. And I used to care so much, like you're saying about comedy. Like, when I first started, I was like actively seeking out like this ethical porn to like be interested in it, and like going to screenings, and like was a fan and wanted to produce it and all these things. And now, after everything, like, I kind of feel genuinely kind of over it about all of it. Like, I'm still like the sex stuff. I'm still like super passionate about making movies, like I said earlier, but when it comes to like the sexual aspect of it, I'm like pretty burnt out. So when I'm consuming porn now, it's like super lazily, tube site, amateur, no one ever has seen, and it's like hideously possible,
right?
Least amount of time spent on it, like, cool.
yeah, that makes sense. You get a little like jaded on something you're consumed with for a decade.
I mean, is it that, you know, when you watch porn that's more produced, because you also make it and you know how the proverbial sausage gets made, you're just
it's like two
in your head. You're like, oh, I can see, I know what's going on here.
Like, continuity errors.
Yeah. I mean, just even like if I'm going to go to like Pornhub and scroll like the more pages I scroll through, like the more people I'm going to see that I'm like, oh, that crazy day happened with them. And then like, oh, I hate that guy. And then, oh,
right. Well, it is so much like comedy.
I hate that location. Like it's fucking.
Yeah. Nothing like a shitty coworker to take you out of the mood.
It's like, it's so fucked up.
You're like, God, Brian again.
Literally. Yeah. So yeah, that's rough. I am newly on testosterone.
Oh.
Which is interesting, because I feel like my interest in sex and libido has like a new bit of a charge. But fortunately, I feel like at this time in my life, I'm like able to just like use my mind and like not make it about porn, which has been interesting. Right. I'm kind of just like... Whoa.
I was going to ask about, you rebranded Dyke Down to Genderflex.
Yeah.
And does this have to do with your own journey with gender or?
Yeah, it's kind of like coincides with myself and just the, like the type of content that I'm inspired to be shooting. When I started Dyke Down, I had this sudden opportunity to have a website made basically. And I came up with the name Dyke Down, and I was newly like kind of in like just kind of newly introduced to just producing my own content by my own free will. And I was super inspired by this like Dyke Down vision. And so I ran with that for like a couple years. And I think it was just like I had been used to so many years of conforming to this kind of like heteronormative porn persona that I was like, Dyke Down was like edgy for me at the time.
Right. I mean, we're a podcast called Dyking Out, and it, it's just like this very aggressive, but it's like, you know what you're getting. Okay. We're dyking out.
Exactly.
This is Dyke Down porn. That is bullshit. It's heteronorm shit. Yeah,
exactly. But yeah, I mean, it was great at the time, but it just kind of pigeonholed me. And I started kind of realizing like that I don't have to conform my entire like personal identity to the porn industry, and I can kind of do my own thing finally. And so I was like, well, if we're being honest, that would be to like be non-binary and be on testosterone, get top surgery, just like do my own thing and like not consider porn. And then I just kind of also was like, shit, I'm not super inspired to shoot this like all dyke all the time stuff.
Right.
So I started wanting to shoot like trans performers and branch out. And it's like, what am I booking you for? Dyke Down. And they're like, but I'm not a dyke. I don't want to be on a site called Dyke Down. And it was just like a whole thing. So I was like,
oh. Right, right.
Here we go.
So many parallels for such different things that we do. But yeah, we get people who are like, we'll talk to an agent. It's like, well, have you had trans men on your show before? You're called dyking out. And this person, I'm like, no. It's, we'll talk to anybody.
Exactly. So yeah, but you guys know the struggle.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and it maps on too to the changes we're seeing in the queer community as a whole. So that's cool that you can kind of explore and adapt to that.
Yeah. I like my queer / lesbian like come up was in a time where like lesbians were very much like a sectored group, and like there was a lot of like hate against like, or I'm sorry, against like bi girls coming into the lesbian community. It was just like that
right.
like really
gatekeeping and
for sure. What is that, like the late aughts, early 2010s?
Because
I really felt that, like I was like, I'm a lesbian, but like later in life in my mid-20s, like I'm bi, but I really didn't, I just wanted to be with them.
Exactly.
And I didn't want to like have to deal, I think, right. subconsciously with a lot of the gatekeeping.
Right.
And well, and especially in shows like The L Word,
right
off the bat.
Like, yeah, I watched that and came out. Like,
exactly. Same.
Yeah. And it was so biphobic, and it made you feel like, well, you know, Alice gets ridiculed for being a bisexual, and then her bisexuality is erased.
Right.
And then she's one of the most biphobic characters as the bisexual one.
Precisely. And mm-hmm. in high school, I was like coming out into like being a baby shame. I completely sucked. Everybody I hung out with was like very much in that zone. So going from that into like the very hetero porn community, when I intended on just like venturing into queer porn.
Right.
Like, I very quickly slid straight into, like, doing the mainstream, like, lesbian stuff, which is made all completely by straight people.
Right.
So it's just, I was always just kind of sticking to that, like, lesbian identity, because that was kind of, like, where I could get away, what I could get away with, I guess.
Right.
But again, now that it's, like, I don't really have to worry about all that, it's changed the game. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And it's parallel with society, I think, with the queer community.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, that idea that lesbian porn was made for so long, or at least the stuff that most people have access to, you know, you're talking about, like, I wish I had been exposed to these queer porn screenings when I was younger,
but
lesbian porn I saw was, to me, not attractive. I'm watching it and I'm like, well, these are straight women cosplaying and neither of them seem like they're really enjoying it. And it almost feels like they're ridiculing
totally
lesbian sex. And this doesn't. So I avoided lesbian sex for. Or, like, lesbian... I didn't avoid lesbian sex. I avoided lesbian porn. And kind of porn in general, because of this feeling like it's not for me. And it wasn't until hosting this podcast that we actually have had many listeners reach out and say, you have to have Nikki Hartz on the podcast.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who is this person?
And I was like, oh, trust me, I know.
Well, thank you. I'm glad my teenage scheme worked.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was a response to listeners hearing me talk about how, like, I don't watch lesbian porn. I just don't find it relatable. It's just straight girls sucking on dildos and, you know, with impossibly long press-ons. And I don't see myself in it. Not that I need to see myself in porn, but you need to feel like the people are enjoying it and that it feels somewhat real to...
Yeah.
To your experience.
It's still, for me, kind of like a really hard to describe thing. What
right.
That, like, I was seeing in, like, mainstream porn back then, but just very much obviously people that aren't enjoying it, I guess, is what it comes down to.
Right.
And so.
And some people do enjoy that. Some lesbians do enjoy sure. that kind of lesbian porn that I.
The kind where they wave on the clit.
Yeah.
The car wash.
Yeah.
And I guess I was, like, kind of naive to what I would be getting myself into. I very much didn't realize how bad it was. Because, again, I was, like, really inspired by all this queer stuff and, like, hadn't really explored too much mainstream porn at all.
Right.
It was just that, like, when I started doing porn, I was like, well, I can't, like, financially at all survive just on ethical stuff. I have to, like, slide into mainstream porn. And when I made that leap, I didn't realize what a gap there was in how things were made.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was very much a lot of, like, me going into things where it's like the positions and everything are directed, like, minute by minute by a male director and a girl that, like, either would be working with another, like, straight girl, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Straight in quotes. Yeah. And like you said, like, they're, like, cosplaying, or I would be working with another girl who would rather work with the straight girl, because then it's not like this lesbian that might actually be into it. 'Cause that's creepy.
Yeah.
It's like, oh no, like, I don't want to be working with all these girls that are, like, freaked out by me and don't want to work with me. So, like, early porn career working with the, like, very heteronormative porn community was strange.
Interesting.
I'm sure it affected my sexual development in all sorts of ways. Yeah.
I imagine that there's a lot of pressure, especially when you're starting out, to say yes to a lot of things, because if you don't, somebody else will. And it's probably the ramp to making money.
Yeah, I mean, it's a slippery slope to making money. I mean, back then it's like, and especially for me, like, I had short hair, I had tattoos that weren't very good. That's when, like, tattoos made, like, a huge difference on your bookings. It had to be a tattoo role for you to get it. And I was only with girls. I was girl only. So I was eligible for like 3% of all porn bookings in Los Angeles. So I quickly was like, okay, well, I've had sex with men. I guess I'll be straight for pay. And then just kind of, it went from there. But yeah, it's slim pickings back then if you wanted to stick to your guns.
I never thought about that with the tattoos, because that seems like something for like a corporate job. They're right. Like, oh no, tattoos are going to be a problem.
Yeah, who knew? And
here it's like, okay, this girl looks barely legal and like she might choke at any second. That's fine. This tattoo though, we're going to need to, like, it's a no-go. Sorry. Yeah,
it was really wild. Like, I literally, when I first started, I signed up with an agency that I did no research on. It was just the only agency I could get an appointment with, and signed up with them. And I like walked into the office where I was told I was walking in to like hear about all this work they'd have lined up for me. In reality, it was me walking into like them saying like, okay, like you need to grow your hair out at least like 2 more inches. Then we can get extensions in there. And here's the place you can go get this tattoo and this tattoo lasered off. Like all this shit, and then we will book you work.
Wow.
It's just like,
and then we will see if we can book, like, right. They're gonna work on booking you. So it's just
right. Did you get tattoos removed? Okay.
I didn't do any of the things that they asked me to do.
I'm trying to picture you with extensions right now. It's not happening.
Hilarious. Terrifying. Yeah, no, I decided to like figure it out otherwise. That agency relationship didn't last very long.
How common is a female agent? Probably less so then, but like
it's few.
Do you see them?
There's like 2 out of 10 maybe, but very much an evil lady. Than just thinking like, oh, like the women in the industry have to be nice. Nah.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus. Yeah.
No.
You mentioned before with OnlyFans having a more direct relationship with your fans now. What is your relationship with your fans like?
I always say that I am really fortunate to have really nice fans. Like my wife, for example, is also a performer. She has like primarily like cis male fans that are like really mean. Just say like nasty. I guess I shouldn't say mean, but just like awful generally. And I'm just like really fortunate to have like a really kind queer based following. So I have a hard time like in general, like directly communicating with fans because I am like pretty awkward, and like I don't have that like having this like egotistical like I don't like having like people like look up to me. Like, does that make sense? I don't know how to.
Oh yeah,
I see myself as like anything. So people like communicating with fans when they're like, "Oh my god, I'm so into whatever." I'm just like, "I don't know."
It can be a lot of pressure too to feel like you have to live up to whatever expectations that they're placing on you when they don't even know you.
Right. I mean, I'm like literally like a sex persona, and play typically a role that's very like dominant and sexual and whatever. And I'm like, so not. Yeah, it's weird. But either way, I do still like appreciate them very much. And I try to provide a lot of like really honest, open content. I just definitely struggle with like personal direct interaction. Like back when it's all been like closed. It's been crazy the past year not having like porn events, like all the.
Right. All the conventions. And
because that was like anxiety central for me, like having like any kind of signings and stuff. Over the years, I would always pretty much just get like blacked out. in a booth with friends. But like, yeah, I always struggled with that a lot. I'm just like super awkward.
Yeah, well now we all are after this year and a half.
Yeah.
So that's good. How important are the AVN awards to you in your orbit?
Well, I don't know. A lot has changed over the past 3 years, especially for me. Like, I used to care a whole lot. I used to like participate and all that and kind of roll with a crew that cared a lot, and I kind of changed up my like social focus in the industry, not participating in like the mainstream stuff as much anymore. So I kind of actively also was like, with my company, I'm not going to like target, or at least I'm not making anything with them in mind, I guess. I
should. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, it's, I've kind of just like removed all of that pressure from myself to like participate in like the industry competition type shit. I'm like focused on like my audience, which is different than the people that focus on that stuff.
Yeah. Cool. sorry, but I was just like comparing it even more to comedy. I'm like, yeah, fuck the industry. Yeah. Do your own thing. You don't need to go to Just for Laughs Festival.
I can only imagine what that would be like. Yeah. I did spend the last 10 years every year going to ABN, going to the awards, and doing the convention all weekend. And it was like a fucking freaky family reunion.
Yeah, seems like a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you're literally like trapping 1,000 people who get paid to have sex with each other in a hotel for a week.
Right. And then like in the convention floor with all the fans, yeah, who get too close to you, it feels like.
Yeah.
Too close.
Wait.
There's, I think on Showtime or something, there's a series on the AVN Awards, and I had to turn it off. I was getting so anxious at like super fans coming up to like Lena Paul or something, just like these dudes just like getting real close. I don't know if I'd be able to handle an environment like that.
It's really intense. It's really fucking intense.
Yeah, no thank you.
Do you feel like being away from that with quarantine and everything, that you have a better sense of like, maybe I don't have to do that anymore?
Yeah. I kind of started to lean that way, like right before I kind of started to distance myself from like that friend group and everything, and just kind of realized like all of this, it reminds me a lot of like high school, I guess. And after like 10 years of participating, I just realized like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't think the success of my porn company for queer people depends on me fucking worrying about any of this.
Right. Yeah. That's definitely the great thing about, you know, sometimes I'm like, I hate social media so much, and I hate all of the pressure that it puts on people. And at the same time, it's such a great way of giving power to individuals who had to go through so many different channels before. And now that you have the following that you have, it enables you to say no to a lot more. So
yeah, exactly. We were talking about before, it was like so much was at mercy of other people, and just had to like grow through it and form a career. And it is very nice, and I feel very privileged to finally be where I am at and be able to say no to like what I don't want to be doing. So yeah, it's great. It's a relief.
What are some things that you see in porn that are like pet peeves?
So many things. I mean,
I guess specifically in queer porn.
Yeah. Or queer. Yes.
It's much easier to point out stuff in like lesbian porn. I think one thing that is leaned on a lot now, like for the mainstream companies that are making lesbian porn, where it's just like cosplaying girls getting together, like a lot of the girls that are really popular in porn now are popular because they're really down to just be like as like nasty as possible, like gaping and anal and shooting things out of your butt and like spraying everyone with squirt and all this. Like the top performers are like people that have done a lot of that, and so like the top performers are the ones that get booked for the biggest scenes. And I feel like where they go with lesbian porn now to keep it interesting for like the male audience is just all of the like nastiest stuff possible. It used to be like people would be really pet peeved by like scissoring. It's like, oh
right,
that's not really all we do. But now it's like they just have them like drink fucking a 6-pack of Pedialyte before the scene and just like spray each other down with like watered up piss and spit in each other's mouths a bunch.
It's really annoying because then they're perpetuating the narrative that squirt is pee, and
right,
they're really not helping us out with that.
It's really annoying. really annoying. When I first started, like, they weren't doing that yet. The like Pedialyte P squirt thing.
Pedialyte, I had no idea.
Yeah, that's
specifically Pedialyte.
Yeah, if you're seeing like any porn that's been made in the past like 5 years that's advertised as a squirt scene, and it's like all those like big name porn girls where they're spraying crazy amounts, it's hydro tabs, which like cause you to not lose any of your water, and then like drinking a bunch of Pedialyte, and it's just like everybody chugs, and then like 7 minutes for it to go through, and then they say action, and everybody just fucking sprays.
Wow.
Okay, yeah.
When I first started, it was like, got the first squirting scene, you had to be a squirter, like, straight up.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Back in my day.
You had to be a natch squirter?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as a squirter, I just thinking back on exes, I'm like, they were definitely influenced by the Pedialyte because they would like expect it to continue to go or something. And it's like,
you just have to wait.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what they expected, but it's, yeah, they thought there was a hydro tab and seven Pedialytes.
Yeah.
Somehow.
There.
Oh, man. When you were performing more, did you have like a pump up playlist, like anything you would do to get yourself?
Yeah, the routine.
Yeah.
I wish when I was like actively being hired to perform a lot back in the day, I was like living out my like wannabe Motley Crue lifestyle in LA and like just like raging.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I was just this like, I was looked at like back then I had like a good reputation in the industry. Like people like directors and stuff like liked me and I showed up, but I was totally like waking up as late as possible, super hungover, getting McDonald's on the way and like showing up with like my backpack with like three girly panty options. And like, I was just kind of like a shit show from the inside out, but having like a great time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now everything's different and I like am spoiled and it's my own set and I like don't perform that option often, but when I do, it's like with somebody I want and I like write the whole scene based on how I want it to go. So that's a different, but
that's great.
Yeah. Much different than it used to be, but I should have a playlist. I don't.
Keep us posted.
I will.
What's a category of porn that you think queer women would be more into if they gave it a chance? What are we sleeping on?
Probably gay male porn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm already onto it. Yeah.
We've heard lesbians, and it's not just from the Kids Are All Right movie where Julianne Moore and Annette Bening watch gay male porn.
This is so embarrassing, but I will admit that that's what made me check it out. And I was like, the logic, it pans out. Yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah. I've heard it a lot of the times over the years, but I feel like if we're talking specifically about like lesbians, I've heard so many times that like, that's like a secret. They don't want to admit it. Guilty pleasure thing. And I'm just like, well, that's silly. But yeah, I feel like that's a pro tip. Should check it out if you haven't,
because
it can be cool.
All right.
Yeah. The secret for me is that it took a terrible movie called The Kids Are All Right for me to,
yeah,
to think of doing
either way,
it.
Whatever gets you there.
All right. Thanks, Annette Bening.
Do you have any favorite performers that are currently working right now?
Yes. Somebody who I just shot for the last two things on Gender Flux. It's a friend of mine named Chris Scott. I met Chris when I used to be a director for like a shitty lesbian company. And her agent brought her in on a go-see and they told us that I needed to shoot her. And we became friends and she was like this little baby porn girl that was a great experience. But like we became friends and we've remained friends over the years. And now, well, in the meantime, Chris got super successful, became like a really successful performer, won a bunch of ABNs, like did the whole thing, but over the last like year or so, especially since quarantine, Chris has kind of like found themselves and came out as non-binary and like
nice
fell out of the conforming to porn's bullshit routine.
All right.
And so like I think that's just like really cool. And so nice. They're like presenting a lot differently now, like I don't know, working with people in a more conscious way, picking performers that they only want to shoot with, even after like having all of the like porn powers one could really want, like was like working with the like top directors, if you will, like whatever, but chose to just kind of like be themselves. So I was like, fuck yeah, come work for my company a bunch, because that's what we're all about. So shout out to Chris. But other than that, also like my wife.
Yes.
Of course.
I feel like we managed to not break her up that much in this podcast.
I know. Lee Raven?
Yeah. Lee, she's got a boob job. So she's about to be making all kinds of new big titty porn. So she's great.
Nice.
But yeah. And then my site, I'm just really into finding these like young, passionate, like kind of indie queer content creators that have like really cool vibes and like creative input and like a real desire to be making like cool shit. So
I'm scrolling through the site right now and yeah, everyone looks very cool. And then the person I stopped on and was like, well, they seem very cool is Chris Scott. So that makes sense. The person I gravitated towards.
If you look at Chris's like first scene on the site, extensions, like full like porno.
Yeah. Wow.
There's like a transformation. You're on the scene. Can see.
Cool to watch. I think I'll always now after this conversation just gravitate towards people's more recent work, because it seems like everyone's going on this sort of journey and not completely, I mean, it's humble beginnings, I know, but it seems like the more recent the better.
Yeah, for especially for porn, the work. Like even the people that are like really popular in mainstream porn right now, it's kind of over the past year just like finally become like really not cool to be like shitty to trans people, like when it used to be totally cool. And
yeah,
those top performers are like shooting with queer people now, when like some of those same people I remember saying like transphobic shit in the past that made me hide, but now yeah, they have to not be a piece of shit publicly. They're like all being supportive, so that's like weird to see because a lot of it's bullshit, but
right,
we have to play nice now, and I'm down for it.
Same. We love it.
Yeah. Is it common for people to be married or dating within the industry?
Yeah. Usually it's not. I don't know. It's people have either been together forever or it's just constant craziness, like flings and nonsense. I don't know. It's all over the place. But yeah, it's hard for people, especially once you've been in for a long time, to date outside of the industry. It's like just,
yeah,
truly can never like understand, I guess.
And also to be able to support each other.
I mean, we've been married for almost 6 years now.
Congrats.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it's crazy and it's flown by. But yeah, I don't think things would, I don't know. I have no idea where things would be if we weren't together. Just it's definitely been a very mutual support, like a codependent in a good way porn career.
Nice.
In your opinion, what's the best lesbian sex scene that you've seen outside of porn? So in a movie or on TV?
Ooh, fuck. Lesbian sex scene in a movie. I mean, like, that's so hard. There aren't a lot of good ones.
I know. You're just going to have to branch out of porn, I guess.
I know.
Do that.
And you know that there's like, I can't even remember the name of the movie, but there's like a steamy scene with Ruby Rose and Christina Ricci.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Excuse me? Furiously Googling.
I know. I get so mad when I find these things out and I don't know about it, because I've had a crush on Christina Ricci since like Casper.
Since she was
in a lesbian relationship with Devon Sawa in that movie.
Okay, I found the scene and that tab will stay.
Okay.
I've just watched the scene on YouTube.
Right. It's like a 2018 movie. around the block.
That's what it is, yeah.
It's an Australian drama. Yeah. So
wow.
We can't be too hard on ourselves. thanks for the tip. Glad you asked, Carolyn.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out. What's the next big thing that you want to tackle in your career?
I'm thinking two things come to mind. I want to make a toy. I feel like that's great. So I'm brainstorming and talking with some people about doing that. And then I also want to do like a NC-17 style, like queer feature movie. It'll be some,
yes,
but it's like just a movie.
Yes.
We want you to do that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do all of our listeners. They haven't heard it yet, but I know they're on board.
Yeah.
That's kind of the goal. So
I'm surprised you don't have a whole line of toys already.
Yeah. I've like always kind of dabbled in the toy industry on the side, and I've just never put out my own. So it's got to happen.
Yeah. All right. Cool. All right.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Well, we mentioned that we end our episodes with a listener question, and usually we do that without our guest. We used to do it with the guests, and for this one in particular, I thought it'd be cool for you to help this listener out. Melody, do you want to read the question?
Let's read the question. So I recently broke up with my first girlfriend. We were dating for just over a year, and I know most people say your first time with a woman is supposed to be great, but our sex life was kind of fucked up, and I'm still a little terrified that I don't know what I'm doing down there. Don't get me wrong, I am definitely attracted to women and thought my ex was the most beautiful woman. I would have had sex with her all the time if I could, but she had a lot of past trauma and not as high a sex drive as me, so we just didn't do that much exploring. Often, it just felt like she didn't want to have sex with me and that I didn't make her feel good or she didn't want me. It's really knocked my confidence, and I still don't feel like I can please another woman or even know how to. Any tips or advice, please?
Damn, brutal.
Yeah.
My first, like, real relationship with a girl had a similar situation where the past trauma really comes into play. And it's really hard when you're, like, new to sex or gay sex especially, and it's super easy for your confidence to be knocked, I guess, and like for you to feel like it's on you. So first of all, like, completely normal and super common, because I in that moment it feels like you are just like super undesirable and suck, so there's that.
Yeah, very normal. I always think I forgot how to have sex in any gap of time between partners. A little bit of that feeling.
I used to not feel that way at all when I shot more. Now I'm like, every time I shoot, it's like the first time I've ever had sex. but with that problem, I feel like when I first, and this wasn't even the only time I've experienced that, it's happened to some degree in all my relationships. I feel like everybody deals with that in some degree. But I feel like understanding that person's safe space is really important. Like, that was something that was communicated to me for a long time and I didn't get it. And I like allowed myself to keep focusing on like me and how it affected me. If you're with somebody that's experienced trauma and is having a hard time like connecting, or has like a low, seems like they have a low sex drive because of that, I feel like it's really important to communicate extra and just set like healthy expectations that like you might not be able to have this type of relationship where you're like passionately jumping into fiery sex, like that you think that's like the only way to have good sex. It's like it might require more set up and communication and like planning for that person to feel safe. But overall, I feel like you'll have more and better sex do that.
Yeah, for sure. And it's also so subjective. I mean, you know, sometimes people are compatible sexually, sometimes they're not.
Right.
I remember there was somebody that I was with that I didn't have like a great sexual experience with them. It was early on in my dating. And then a couple years later, I met the person who was currently sleeping with them. And they're like, aren't they just awesome and bad? And I'm like, No, what? What are you talking about? So, like, you never know. I'm like, well, good for her. I'm glad she found somebody who thinks that she's delivering.
Yeah, that's another thing. Like, a couple times I've tried to, like, hook up with other people that are like, no, I'm just a top. And it's, like, the worst. It's, like, just doesn't.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think it boils down so much to communication, too. And I feel like with two women especially, there's just so much thinking going on. But with anybody, just like communicating what you want and asking and figuring out how people like to be touched. I mean, regardless of gender, how people like to be touched and knowing that is a huge thing. So you can't let... Everybody's different. You can't let your experience with one person think that this is going to color all of your future experiences.
Yeah. And this person says, I still don't feel like I can please other women or even know how to. You do. Just do it. Like, you'll know. Just get in there. Is that good advice? Just get all up in there. I mean, should we not? Oh, Nikki, now that you're here, sometimes I've heard advice. People are like, just watch porn. Mm. Would you tell this person to watch lesbian porn? Maybe that's too general. Maybe is there
drink
even
some Pedialyte? Yeah. All right, check a Pedialyte
and get ready to razzle dazzle.
I would say watch porn with caution.
Right, exactly.
You know, check out genderfucks.com.
Yeah, go. Yeah. I was just gonna. I didn't want to make you uncomfortable. I was gonna be like, "Well, we're setting you up and watch Nikki Hartz."
No, right.
I'm not there. But no, I mean, if you're hitting the internet, I can safely say that all of my porn scenes are top priorities, making sure that people are like only doing what they want. Mm-hmm. So it's like,
which shouldn't be a novelty.
I know, right? You're blowing my mind.
You wouldn't believe it. So I can't say that for everyone else. Yeah. Site.
So if you think you're a little rusty, watch ethical porn if you're feeling a little too nervous to jump right in. Right?
Fair.
So
totally.
Nikki, what are we plugging for you? We have genderflux.com.
Yeah.
Your OnlyFans.
Yeah, my OnlyFans. It's OnlyFans.com/NikkiHartz.
You're on Twitter, Instagram, at Nikki Hartz.
Yeah, at Nikki Hartz X on Twitter and Instagram. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Awesome.
Awesome. Is there anything that's coming up that you want to get some eyes on that we should be anticipating? Or
I mean, for my, like, I'm really pretty much just focused on the sites for right now. Awesome. Like I said, there should be some, like, cool, like, feature-type stuff coming soon-ish, but either way, every week we have a new release. So,
oh, cool,
great!
We'll stay tuned,
keeping it fresh.
Thank you so much, Nikki.
Yeah, Nikki, this has been great. Thank you so much. Okay, so if you have a question, you can send it in to dykingout@gmail.com. Remember, if you're a patron, your question goes to the tippity top of the list. You can follow us everywhere at Dyking Out. You can follow me at TGI Carolyn.
You can follow me at Melody Kamali.
Thank you for dyking out with us this week.
Hey, we'll see you next Tuesday.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.